Welcome to Capital Link's company presentation series.
I am Paul Lampoudis at Capital Link. Welcome back to the 2026 Capital Link company presentation series. In this series, company management highlights the company's current operations, business development, growth prospects, and sector outlook. We are happy to have with us today the senior management of International Seaways, Ms. Lois Zabrocky, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Thomas Trovato, Head of Investor Relations. International Seaways is one of the largest tanker companies worldwide, providing energy transportation services for crude oil and petroleum products in international flag markets. International Seaways owns and operates a fleet of 75 vessels, which include VLCCs, Suezmaxes, Aframaxes, LR1s, and MR tankers. The company is listed on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker symbol INSW. In terms of logistics, we begin with a company presentation followed by a live Q&A. Please note that participants can submit their questions through the Q&A button on your screen during the webinar. Your questions will be answered during the Q&A session. Before we begin our webinar, as a reminder, kindly note that this discussion is strictly for informational and educational purposes and should not be relied upon. The webinar does not constitute an offer to buy or sell securities or investment advice or advice of any kind, and Capital Link bears no responsibility for the content. Now, let us begin with our discussion. I'd like to pass the floor to Ms. Lois Zabrocky. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Paul. I want to thank everyone for joining us at International Seaways on a very bitterly cold January day. I don't think we've ever seen Manhattan like this in years, and it's a perfect setting for us to talk about energy markets and moving oil at sea. International Seaways, we have both crude and product tankers. We just went out with an announcement today about a sale of 5 vessels. And hence, we have 69 vessels that we will have pro forma thereafter. And International Seaways is distinct in that we consider ourselves the tanker ETF. Why do we say that? We have both crude and product carriers here at International Seaways. And what you're going to see there on the right-hand side is that what we've been doing is upscaling our fleet, high-grading it, and we now, because we trade our LR1s in dirty, we've very deliberately been constructing our fleet so that now we have more exposure to the crude markets than we do to the products, so that the composition here is 39 vessels trading crude, 30 ships trading products. And the reason that we've done that is that we've been continuously working to modernize our fleet, make it more efficient and bigger. We talk about being a tanker ETF. Right now, in both the United States and in South Korea, you can see product margins are spiking. We've had a serious winter in the Northern Hemisphere. And when you see those product margins spike, the call for crude goes out, and you really see both crude and product markets moving in tandem, sometimes offset, but very often what you'll see is crude markets will breathe, product markets will strengthen, and vice versa. So the last 5 years have been the perfect setting to have this both crude and product, we say balanced fleet and balanced exposure. So we think that's a key differentiator. Now, one thing that we also just went out with a press release yesterday is that we have purchased fully Tankers International, which is our VLCC pool that we've been participating with for over 25 years. And the reason that we really highlight these pools, and we're going to talk about them in a little bit, is that our fleet of 60 spot vessels has exposure with nearly 200 other spot vessels through these pools, which gives us strength and scalability to be able to capture the markets. You go to the next one, Tom. These are investment highlights, and They're definitely worth digging into. We've got a page on each of them. So I'm just going to pull a couple of highlights here. Right now, INSW, we are in our 10th year independently listed on the New York Stock Exchange, having been spun off from our predecessor that was in business for all of our lifetime. We started under $500 million in international seaways with about 30 ships that were close to 13 years old. Today, we stand as a $3 billion company with 70 ships and an average of about 10 years old in our fleet, which we think is a great age profile for the company. While we've done this, we've maintained a healthy balance sheet. We've grown the company with a business model that helps to scale up and down with the tanker cycle. And while our growth platform is important, we believe our balance is the key to being successful as a tanker company and for our investors. We have both crude and products, we have both spot and time charter employment, and we're using our free cash flow with very disciplined capital allocation and prioritizing sustainability for the markets. The tanker market has been going from strength to strength, and we see this continuing in 2026. Fundamentally, we have consistent oil demand growth and regional imbalances of crude and products. Demand remains firm east of Suez, and that's where we see the primary emerging market growth. And certainly, a lot of cargo, particularly crude, is moving from the Western Hemisphere. Tom's going to jump in and share with you how we've been returning to our shareholders and our capital allocation discipline and approach.
Now, thanks, Lois. We have a disciplined capital allocation strategy where we can kind of pull all the levers at important times within each tanker cycle. On the left-hand side of the page, we have our three pillars of allocating capital: returns to shareholders, fleet renewal, and deleveraging. And we try to pull on these almost every quarter, but at some point in time, you make certain adjustments for the tanker cycle. We on the top left there, the returns to shareholders, we've been paying dividends equivalent to about a 75% payout ratio, and we have a share repurchase program of about $50 million. Since 2020, we've paid nearly $1 billion in aggregate through these programs to shareholders. Also below that is the fleet renewal side. We have a track record. We do buy and sell assets throughout the cycle. There's a nice slide on the next one, which I'm not going to steal from Lois, so we'll give it to her next. And right below that, you see debt reduction. We believe that leverage is necessary in this capital intensive business, but we don't feel that we are going to ever achieve a zero net debt because it is important to our business. Today, we're about 20% gross leverage to our asset values, which is pretty comfortable for this point in the cycle. And we have mandatory repayments of only about $30 million per year. And we strive to keep the balance sheet in good shape so that we have low cash break-evens to set us up for growth opportunities as they come about. On the right-hand side of the page, this is really proof positive of the results of our strategy. On the upper side, you can see that our TSR and a total shareholder return over the last 10 years has been about 25% annualized return, which we think that is pretty competitive and certainly ahead of the peer group. On the lower left-hand side, as Lois mentioned before, we started out with less capacity and an older fleet, and today we have significantly more capacity and a younger fleet. And we strive to continue to do that each and every day. And on the lower right-hand side, the results of our deleveraging has lowered our cash break-even by nearly 3,000 bucks a day, which is a tremendous achievement. And I'll flip it over to you.
Thank you so much, Tom. So this is one of my favorite charts. And if you look on the left-hand side, you'll see the size of our circles represents the size of the investment that International Seaways has done. And when we were newly spun off, you'll see basically the beginnings of our fleet renewal all the way on the left-hand side. And then the really large bubble here was at the absolute nadir of the market, the tanker market. You know, everybody that's in the tanker business knows we have to go with the cycles. You don't really want to fight that. So we were really lucky in our timing in merging with Diamond S. That's that largest bubble there where we came together and doubled, more than doubled the size of our fleet, acquiring 64 tankers, both crude and product. And then that bubble, right? Kind of overlaying it there. Those are our three dual fuel VLCCs that are on burning LNG, are on long-term charter to Shell with a very profitable profit sharing. And then these activities set us up for what you can see has just been a very, very strong tanker market. If you look on the right-hand side, we continue to renew the fleet. That is something that's absolutely critical in the tanker markets, is that you have to make sure that you're high grading the fleet all the time. You know, the vessels, we're right now in the middle of taking our six LR1s. We already have taken delivery of two, and we have four more coming. And by doing that, you have some of the most efficient vessels that are in the marketplace. Tom put a little key on here, you'll see on the upper left-hand side, that I think is really telling about INSW. 92 vessel purchases, that's including that merger, and 62 vessel sales plus our joint ventures. You know, what does that mean? You know, we're sailing along with a pretty similar profile, you know, trying to get bigger, get more modern, and improve our efficiency over the years. At the same time, we're paddling underneath the surface because you can't remain idle in this business. So we're all about high grading the fleet, lowering the age, and increasing our efficiency on our journey. I'm going to talk a little bit about our hybrid operating model. So New York City is the nucleus of INSW, and then we have very strong, long partnerships with outsourced third parties. For example, on the technical side, we have both Anglo Eastern in Singapore and V Group up in Glasgow that technically manage our vessels. And we find that to be a real strength with these long-term partnerships. On board our vessels, our average officers have been with us well over a decade. You say, well, gee, the company's only a decade old. When I go on board a vessel, many of these guys have been with us and our predecessor for their entire careers. And that's really critical in a business like ours, where safety, safety, safety is foremost in the top of our mind. Commercially speaking, we're showing you, okay, basically the reason that we roll with various pools is that we want to make sure that in times like today, where the markets are highly volatile, if you only have one VLCC, it's very possible you could be stuck on the US West Coast when the market goes to $125,000 a day. When you're in the pool, you have more natural tick points all along the curve. And that's what Tom shows us on the lower left-hand side there, where you just have many more opportunities to catch the volatility in the market, which is going to show higher time charter equivalents over time. Touching on our financial.
Yes, so I we love to put up the balance sheet, but it there's a lot of numbers on the page, right? So I think the best part is to look towards the right side. This is our balance sheet as of September 30th. We had $985 million in total liquidity, which included $413 million of cash and $572 million in RCF capacity, undrawn RCF capacity. That is a little bit on the high side. There was a timing situation with us because we announced and successfully completed a Norwegian bond, and we took the proceeds before September 30th. But following that, in the fourth quarter, we specifically announced as well that we were actually raising the funds to repay what we call our Ocean Yield sale leasebacks. So it's really closer to what we would say is about $700 million or $725 million of total liquidity. We have about $2 billion of assets on the books that's acquired at cost, but today's market value, this was September 30th, but actually today's market value is closer to $3.4 billion. So it's much higher, and that just goes to show our purchasing power. And on the bottom right-hand side, we kind of lay out our debt profile here. We have no maturities until the next decade. We are levering a little bit higher during 2026 because we have fully financed basically four remaining new builds that are coming in the LR1 class. And again, as I said to you before, I think that zero debt is not really on the table for Seaways because we believe that leverage is part of our capital intensive business.
All right. So sustainability. INSW is a leader in sustainability. We remain undeterred in our progression. Transportation shipping is about 3% of the overall carbon footprint in the world, and we need to do our part. We also talk about governance, which has always been important for not only INSW, but OSG, our predecessor, that was public since 1969. And that is a real emphasis for us. And we do a lot with safety and also with social programs. And INSW is every year in the top quartile of Weber's sustainability scorecard, which we take a point of pride in, and we work to continuously improve our positioning. And the one thing I'll say here, sustainability is good for business because, this morning on the way in, I got a report from our sustainability engineer that we have in India who looks at every vessel's consumption every day and just continuously works to, okay, why was this auxiliary engine running? How do we measure it? If you measure it and you monitor it, then you can improve it. And this is a daily focus so that every ton of bunkers that we save is going to improve our sustainability and improve our profitability. If we look at the market outlook, we are going from strength to strength as I started, really this conversation. And we just see that continuing, and we're going to keep going into that. And one thing I think is really significant behind the scenes, OPEC is generally very bullish on oil demand increases. The EIA, we consider, the Department of Energy to sort of be the middle guys. Even IEA out of Europe continually is increasing their estimates on oil demand in 2026 and 2027. So they're up over a million barrels a day, which is something that behind the scenes is very constructive for tanker markets. When we look at the global oil complex, I really think the key thing here is on the lower right-hand side, Tom really illustrates the deficit that all of Asia has on the tanker markets, and you're talking over 30 million barrels a day. So again, certainly now we've had OPEC come back on with more barrels. However, where you've really seen the increased oil production has been in the Americas, Canada, the United States, Guyana, Brazil, and now even Argentina. And that oil is fundamentally moving from the Western Hemisphere east and adding to ton-mile demand. Geopolitics, I don't recall a time in basically my 30-year career where oil tankers were in the market and in the news every day, right? So geopolitics has upended the oil tanker business over the last 5 years, and we look for this to continue on. We have more sanctioned vessels today than essentially there are vessels on order. And this is something where, we have an overall aging tanker fleet, which you can see on the upper right-hand side. So when you combine the age of the fleet with these sanctioned vessels that are getting increasingly shoved out of the market, we have a very good construct in the background for oil tanker demand and oil tanker transportation, particularly on companies like INSW that are operating, everything legally, everything in the top tier of performance and with the proper counterparties. Tanker supply. If you look at the tanker order book, it has crept up over the last couple of years. Nonetheless, what you essentially have is an order book of about 15%. And you're looking at it being out, those deliveries are spaced over 26, 27, 28, and even into 2029. And you're looking at something like 4 to 5% a year. That essentially is the amount of natural attrition that you have on our 20 to 25 year assets. So we're really in a place where the aging of the fleet is going to come home to roost. These sanctioned vessels are going to have to get squeezed out of the market. And this is going to continue to be great for international seaways. With that, I will open it up to questions.
Thank you, Lois. And we have a few questions on geopolitics. We can start with maybe expand on what you just discussed earlier. Do you feel that more sanctions will come down on the tanker fleet? Is there an order of magnitude of how many ships are trading in the shadow fleet?
No, absolutely. I mean, we keep tracking, and I didn't even add to my totals the latest batch that came out here in, the last week. But we have over 800 tankers that are essentially operating under sanctions at this time. And that includes a heavy amount of VLCCs, which is somewhere around 140. And that's out of, maybe 850, 900 Vs in the world. So it's just really a very significant amount. And what you're seeing is that, okay, the Venezuelan actions the United States has taken has made it so that the sanctioned vessels are no longer comfortable going to Venezuela. And now oil traders and, of course, oil companies have licenses to move barrels legally out of Venezuela. So this has opened up additional barrels for compliant oil tanker companies such as ourselves. So you see that in Venezuela. We see the heightened tensions in Iran. And, the administration continues to put pressure on Russia. And the way that they do that is by, working on both India and China, who are the biggest consumers of the Russian barrels. So on every front, you see the sanctioned barrels and therefore the sanctioned tonnage coming under pressure. And it looks to us that that will only continue in 2026.
We have some more questions from the audience here, Lois. Are you considering new build ordering in any segments at the moment?
So Tom mentioned earlier, we still have four new buildings to come from K Shipyard in Korea. And those are LR1s that will are suitable in beam for the old canal in Panama. And those will serve our highest earning sector, our LR1s that essentially are trading both crude and heavy oil in the Americas. And then beyond that, we will consistently look for, okay, the new buildings we've done, in our history have been something that's a differentiator, like the VLCCs that are actually burning LNG today, or the LR1s where, there weren't any modern vessels that were in that sector that suited our needs. So we'll look very carefully of how do we continue to stay young, increase our efficiency, and we will be opportunistic. because we think that's how you win as a tanker company. I mean, we've been very pragmatic in how do we get bigger, how do we get younger, how do we become more efficient, whether that's a merger, whether that's secondhand tonnage, whether it's a tonnage swap with other owners, or whether it's new buildings, which is always excellent. The team that's overseeing our new buildings out in Korea, I've worked with the lead supervisor there for 20 years, right? So that's, we look at that as a key component of INSW, and yet we're going to be very disciplined on it.
More on the fleet. You talked about new builds. So what about purchases and sales? Kind of what age do you think you look to sell? Do you look at any resales in the slots, or just elaborate a little bit?
No, absolutely. I mean, the vessels that, for example, we went out with today, I think they were on an average of 17 years old, right? That we are selling. And, quite honestly, I mean, you almost hate to sell anything in today's market. However, you must realize that, okay, when you see prices that, every one of these MRs that we have sold in the last 5 years has been at a tremendous gain. So the vessels have more than produced their actual value, and we're banking gains on every one of the vessel sales. And the same is true on the VLCCs that we're selling, where we just bought a 5-year-old VLCC in the fourth quarter. And now what we're doing is selling vessels that are 15 years old. And just continually, you want to make sure that we still think the fundamentals are strong. So we're going to look for those opportunities where we can swap tonnage in a very advantageous way for our shareholders.
What about spot versus time charters? Do you look to do more in this type of market, or you just kind of ride the spot market as strong as it is?
And we have, again, a balanced approach, right? So, we look to lock in. When you see an ideal fixture is a 3-year deal at above long-term averages that produces a super return on your assets. That's what we love to do. And then we're opportunistic within that, right? When we see that, we can lock in and add value to INSW and our shareholders, we're going to do that, right? But we're careful. So, we waited kind of for this moment, and we may look to lock in some more deals while the market is very strong. And that's something we'll be looking at in 2026.
This is more of a little bit more on the ESG side. Do you look at, alternative fuels, wind-assisted propulsion, retrofits, or new build on new builds? We'll talk a little bit more about that.
No, absolutely. We do continuously, and we have a sustainability group, and the gentleman that is overseeing our new building program, he was just over in Europe looking at alternative fuels as well as wind propulsion. We haven't done any retrofits at this time, but all of this technology just continues to improve. So, for example, on our LR1s, we did build them with strengthened decks and bigger generators, and with a contemplation to convert them to alternative fuel at the first or second survey. So that's something that we believe will continue. And for example, I mentioned the LNG vessels are burning, I mean our VLCCs are burning LNG. So we'll look to add this into our fleet as technologies continue to improve.
Great. A few other questions on TI, actually. I know you touched on it originally. Let's talk a little bit about the Suezmaxes and a little bit ahead on TI.
Absolutely. This is super exciting for International Seaways. So, we have a long history with our predecessor in running pools, right? So, we used to run an Aframax pool with and a Suezmax pool. We've been partners in Tankers International for 25 years. And when you look at it, this is just a natural evolution for INSW. We want to maintain scale and grow. And there's such a high correlation between Suezmaxes and Vs, somewhere along 85%. You have an overlapping customer base. So for us, this move to fully own TI and then to bring our Suezmaxes in is really just a revisiting of our past, getting closer to customers, and making sure that you're evolving so that you're meeting customer needs, you have as much market intel as possible, and you can really maximize those time charter equivalents.
Great. What about growth opportunities? Is there organic growth, or are we really going outside of Seaways? Talk a little bit more
I mean, I would say yes, right?
there.
So, in a tanker market like today, again, just kind of touching on that, we've been creative where we sold some older vessels and actually swapped with another owner. And that's one of the benefits of being both crude and product. So not everyone can do that. Certainly the public owners cannot necessarily do that. We've gone out and we've bought ships with shares. We have done a merger with shares. We've done outright purchases. We've done new buildings. And you're going to have, in our belief, that type of open-mindedness in order to really maximize the returns for shareholders. By doing this portfolio approach, all of that combined, we think produces the highest return.
What about Venezuela? I know we touched a lot on Russia, but in the other geopolitics, what's your take on Venezuela?
This one is very close to the roost for me because, OSG had a 20-year joint venture with PDVSA, and we used to coordinate all of those barrels, and they were producing 3 million barrels a day. So, when you see a country is now producing under 1 million barrels a day, I'm very hopeful that the reinvestment will happen and the amount of production is going to increase. I think that's going to take time because the infrastructure in Venezuela has been deteriorated over the last more than a decade. And I think that this is going to bring more, and it already is bringing more oil onto the market for, again, compliant tonnage. And it's going to be good for the US Gulf refineries. And I think that over time, it's also going to be good for Venezuela. So we are very hopeful there, but overall, it's just very, very good for publicly traded INSW to have more barrels that can be moved that are free from all sanctions.
Can you break down a little bit more, your outlook on the crude and products separately?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we've shifted our exposure, as I mentioned in the beginning, right? So that, pro forma, our 69 vessels will be 39 in crude, 30 exposed to products. It isn't that we don't think product market will be strong. It's that that was our oldest age profile. It is for sure that, the MRs, I would say, led since 2022, they have led all sectors pound for pound in producing the highest returns. And so we really do feel like the big ships, the VLCCs, the Suezmaxes, and you're seeing it in the market today, are really taking off. And for the Vs, I would say they were a little bit late to the game, and now you're really seeing them run. So we want that exposure at the moment to the big crude, but we're not very excited to take all the chips off the table on the products because you continue to see very strong refining margins. One of the dynamics going on in the market right now is that you have excess amount of crude on the water at sea. Why? You're looking at it, something like two-thirds of that excess oil is sanctioned barrels. So that's not moving efficiently. You're seeing that oil just sitting around. And what that's doing is creating more opportunity, again, for compliant owners leading on the crude, but then following on the product. This very, very harsh Northern Hemisphere winter is driving those refinery margins. And we're seeing our MRs just for the fifth year posting outsized returns, and we look for that to continue. So we're really strength and strength on both crude and product.
Great. I think we've got time for a few more. How do you feel about scrapping and amongst the sanctioned fleet? Because it feels like with the large fleet that's over 50%, that's over 15 years old. Do you feel like there's going to be more scrapping activity? And just elaborate further.
No, absolutely. So, one thing with the mega deal between India and the EU, it looks like the EU will be able to recycle in the subcontinent, provided that the yards are consistent with the Hong Kong Convention. So that would be a really nice addition for European owners to be able to recycle their vessels. And when you look at the sanctioned fleet, we have to push this fleet out of the market. There can be no coming back for these substandard oil tankers that are not maintained, that are not really properly treating their seafarers, and are not investing. They're not properly insured. So those vessels, I would love to see a construct put together to push those ships out of the tanker market. There's absolutely no place for vessels that have been operating illegally and are aged and run down in the legitimate tanker traffic lanes.
With the escalation with Iran, I know we had this discussion probably last June or so. Do you think the Straits of Hormuz are have a potential to close?
Listen. In this world that seems to be on fire, I'm loath to predict, but what we know is that there's nearly 20 million barrels a day that go through the Straits of Hormuz. So any that's not a sustainable situation where traffic could not flow through the Straits of Hormuz.
And I think I've got time for one more. So, what is your favorite asset class today?
Wow, I would say the big ships, right? So, that market has, you see the volatility, you see the spike in the fourth quarter, and returns went over $100,000 per day. Even today, the spot markets are very strong, and that you just see fundamental dynamics of concentrated tonnage where you've got owners actually gaining strength, and that's a really exciting sector right now.
Great. I think we are at the end of the
Okay.
presentation. So,
Yep, INSW. Thank you so much.
and thank you both. And thank you, everyone, for taking the time to join us today and for your questions. Please note that this webinar will soon be available for access upon demand on CapitalLink's website at capitallinkwebinars.com and CapitalLink's YouTube channel. Thank you, everyone, again, and to the INSW team. You may now disconnect.
Thank you.
Thank you.